It's time for Twig this week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here from Amsterdam. Kevin Marks from the north of England. Stacy Higginbotham from Austin. We'll talk about AMP and your Gmail, a new app that'll insert replies into your notifications, and an ad blocker in Chromium starting tomorrow. It's all coming up next on Twig today.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 444, recorded Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2018. The Fritter Critter. This Week in Google is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use cloud accounting software for small business owners. Make this year your most productive year yet. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/Twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, where we will cover whatever the heck we want to. We've already been delving deep into word meanings and etymologies. Stacy Higginbotham has 4 books about it. She's from Stacy on IoT.com. Hi, Stacy.
Hello, you guys.
Great to see you. Thank you so much for your help in Austin. We've got a great panel coming up, thanks to you.
I'm still looking for some more people, I'll be honest.
Well, I like the ones we've set up. I think you and 2 other people, both of whom I think you suggested. So thank you.
Yes.
I really thank you. That we'll tell you more about that in a little bit. Also here, Kevin Marks, he of the Indie Web, protector of all things original internet. Thank you, Kevin. Good to see you.
That's the hope.
And speaking of the original internet, Jeff Jarvis, who predates...
I'm that old.
Even the internet. He is from BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, and he's on hiatus. No, you're on walkabout. You're in Amsterdam.
I'm in Amsterdam at the Google Digital News Initiative event tomorrow.
Oh, that's interesting.
I love Amsterdam.
I do too.
We all think.
No. In fact, somebody told me pot is not legal in Amsterdam.
But I believe.
It's unenforced. The law is unenforced.
Yeah, and I think I'm not sure that tourists can do it anymore in the coffee shop. I don't know. There was kind of a crackdown on that. But I walked by tons of cafes, and you have that little skunky smell all the time.
Yeah, I don't like it. Come to California, where it is legal for tourists and people who live here. Completely legal, like recreational, medicinal, any kind of all.
Don't you have to be a certain age?
Yeah, you have to be 21, just like booze.
Okay.
Yeah. No. And I think you can't, just like smoking cigarettes, you can't like just walk around smoking. Or maybe you can. I don't know. I haven't tried.
I mean, in New York, it's not legal, but you smell it on the street.
Oh, God. The smell is so annoying. It's interesting. Netflix had a show about pot, a cannabis show. They just canceled it. I think people, I think now that it's legal in so many states, people are just like, I'm over it. It's only interesting if it's forbidden. all right. As long as you're at the News Initiative, of course, one of the things, Richard Gingras, I presume Richard's there. Yeah.
Yes, he is. I saw him tonight.
He's been on this show. He's in charge of the Google News Initiative and was here to defend AMP. Now, defend this. They're bringing the power of AMP to Gmail? AMP stands for Accelerated Mobile Pages. It was created in an era where websites were so heavy that they just were unusable on mobile. And Google created this extension. It's not official, W3C standard or anything, but it's an extension that prohibits a lot of heavyweight stuff, only allows JavaScript approved and served by Google. Images are limited, stuff like that. But now, so let me ask Kevin, as a defender of the open web, I don't know if we've ever talked about AMP with you. How do you feel about AMP?
I think we talked about it just after it
was launched. We did.
Right in the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning. I made a page that embedded that show that was an AMP page.
I remember that. Yes.
So I think, there's trade-offs in it. So part of the thing that I don't like about it is that it replaces some of the basic HTML elements with special AMP elements. So images and videos, things that HTML will do natively, it requires you to replace them with the AMP ones. That means that they have to load JavaScript to execute, which means that you are dependent on the JavaScript from Google loading first. The thing that's good about it is that it has actually made particularly news organizations think about having pages that load quickly. And in that respect, it's achieved its. But it's now getting to the point where they're shoehorning strange stuff into it. So as well as they're putting it in Gmail thing, there's also, we need something like stories in it. So there's a way of doing stories in AMP now, which is stories in the Twitter moment stroke Instagram stories.
Right. I found your page, and this actually goes back to 2015. KevinMarks.com/AmpReaction.html. And it even has a clip from the show when we talked about it. I'll tell you how long ago this was. Jeff has no facial hair.
Yeah, we look young.
Yeah. But now that they want to extend
the whole show, it's just a clip.
Yeah. It's a whole show. Since then, AMP has, I think some people have turned around on AMP a little bit. And now Google wants to bring AMP to Gmail.
Explain what that means.
A powerful way for developers to create more engaging, interactive, and actionable email experiences. First of all, I'm not a fan of HTML in email anyway, but for a lot of people, email newsletters are a big part of their economic activity. Even us, we use, and Jason Calacanis is always saying, and you, Kevin, yes, Stacey Higginbotham, actually, that's her bread and butter, is her email newsletter on IoT. So those are HTML, right? Stacey, you use some tool to make that.
I do use some tool to make it. I use MailChimp, and I have someone who codes it, the templates and stuff for me in HTML.
So I guess I'm gathering that's the purpose of AMP, because I guess all Gmail is ultimately HTML mail. I don't know. I always try to send
you
my email.
You could strip the HTML out of it, but.
Well, you wouldn't get any pictures.
That's
kind of
life.
The reason.
Well, and I think, isn't this to help? It is annoying when you're on your mobile phone to start something in email and then end up opening a whole new app. And then you're away from email, and then you forget what you were originally doing. Like the biggest challenge for me when trying to triage and make my way through email on my phone is that I have to go around so many places, and it's stupid and it's non-productive. So I actually am looking forward to this.
The best kind of amping of email would be just plain text email, not HTML email. But if you're going to do HTML email, I guess this makes sense. And that's, by the way, it looks like what Google's doing is reaching out to people like you and your developer to use AMP when you make an HTML email.
Now, the challenges with AMP stories was always that once you made something an AMP link, it was AMP or else, and you like lost it, correct? That was a terrible way to explain that.
You could have two versions. You could have a non-AMP version.
Right, but you would have to do two versions. You couldn't just, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, you could just serve the AMP version.
You could just serve the AMP version, yeah.
Here's an example from Google.
Relying on Google.
This is
Also, Google will cache the AMP version and serve it directly from there.
Right.
If you choose, you don't have to do that.
I mean, Google always said, well, anybody can run an AMP server, but I wonder how many people are running AMP servers.
What is this?
This is an example of AMP stories on Google's blog site.
That means my email game is going to have. The nice thing about having an email newsletter is you can just give people text.
Not anymore, baby. You got animation. You got pictures moving. You got
princes and princesses.
Yeah. This is People Magazine.
You need romance in your email, Stacey. Romance.
I talk about compromised sex toys all the time.
There's an opportunity. There's an opportunity. Let's see what Cosmopolitan is doing for amped stories. This is apple cider vinegar is the magic potion you need in your life. The blockchain. How about Wired? The blockchain. Oh, these aren't live. This is just an image. Too bad. I was hoping I could go right to
I can't do that. That's going to force me to up my game tremendously. My independent publishing self is screwed.
It's like making Twitter moment. But also, it's this portrait shape one image a time thing. And then the desktop version of that is, let's crop your screen down to this big and put an image in it.
Right.
Which is kind of annoying.
You know, are you okay with this, Kevin? Because it's open.
They can show you four frames. It's open-ish. I mean,
the thing that made me kind of live with AMP is that it degrades it to, if you're not using an AMP enabled tool, it degrades to standard, you know, web standards. The thing I don't like about it is that Google seems to be favoring AMP stories and AMP articles in its search, which seems to me anti-competitive. So I'm not thrilled about that.
Well, now I'm not thrilled either.
You're not thrilled because you're getting competition.
No, I just have to work harder.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you don't. You don't have to. So AMP for email is a spec that will be coming to Gmail later this year. There's a developer preview you have to sign up for. I've signed up, but I haven't been offered it. But it's really not for me. It's not for any end user to put in their emails. For people who are doing email newsletters. You know, I presume MailChimp would have...
It's for advertisers.
It's for advertisers. At some point, MailChimp would have a tool that would make you AMP your stuff. My blog is AMP because it's on WordPress.com, a sponsor, and it's automatic. It just gives you an AMP version of it. All right. I just thought I'd bring that up. I thought there might be more outrage.
It's what it is, you know, the challenge of doing HTML email at the moment is you've basically got to make your HTML compatible with the worst email renderer of HTML, which tends to be Outlook, which is running some ancient version of the IE renderer that has been abandoned. It's like IE4 or something. It is some really old version like that. And also the other ones will strip lots of stuff out of it as well. So even Gmail will strip a lot of things out of you. So the way that the guy who runs AMP was pitching this was that it'll give you an up-to-date version of HTML that you can put alongside your plain text and your HTML you have compatible for like retro viewers, and then you'll be able to do rich stuff for the people who can accept it. Which is like, yes, you just maybe do a bunch of extra work to make my stuff appear. Thanks.
So as long as we're along those lines, Google's also starting to play with introducing the reply feature that you saw initially in Inbox and then in Allo in more messaging apps. For instance, I would love to see it in Hangouts and Android Messages.
Here's an SMS.
Here's an example. Yeah, this is in Android Messages. Alex, when can you be home? And then there's a button to the right that has 13 minutes and a picture of a car. I presume you pressed that. Or maybe he sent that. Here's Gabe, are you at the restaurant? And then it offers three possible replies. Yes, yes, I'm here. I am indeed. Nothing about no.
Why is it no?
Maybe because Google knows you are.
Since you're there, yes.
No, don't give it that much credit because I get those all the time and I love them. But it'll be like, can we do a meeting on Friday or Thursday? And the options are either works for me. Thursday works for me, or that sounds great.
Not, I don't want to meet you. I don't ever want to see you again. Yeah. Yeah. So this is coming from Area 120, which I was not familiar with, but it's the kind of the experimental Google stuff, area120.google.com.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a workshop for Google's experimental program. So I didn't know this, so I've signed up saying, yes, I'd like to participate. But probably because I would mention it on the show, they wouldn't let me.
You're not allowed to.
I bet not. Yeah.
That's the first rule of 120.
One doesn't talk about 120. All right. Maybe I would love to see. So I'm unclear. This is a story from Android Police that says they're going to make it an app. Reply is an app. So
not another chat app. No.
No, it puts the app. The app puts the reply into the notifications. So it modifies, you know, the smart notifications.
Then that means you got one back and forth, and then the continuing conversation is not going to help with. Google has to.
They should build it into. I agree with you. They should build it into the app.
Yeah, and the other report out there is that Google's going to finally let you text from the web. If they could unify all this chat stuff together and add that functionality, they'd finally catch up to and by an inch beat Apple.
Yeah, this was in a early, somebody was analyzing the source code of Android Messages Of course, you can text from the web now with Hangouts, but Android Messages, you cannot. And that, if you can parse Google's confusing messaging about its messages, is there what they want people to start using? Because it has RCS, Google's messages has RCS in it. But I just keep using I'm a Google Fi user, and Hangouts is the only way that I can do everything I want, which is get text messages to all my Fi phones and enabled phones and from the web, which I really like. Frankly, the functionality of Hangouts remain, at least for Google Fi users, remains very good. I'm just waiting for them to pull the plug on that. Do any of you use Hangouts with just a non-Fi phone, with like a T-Mobile phone or anything? Does it not?
I do.
Does it work okay?
It's all right.
Aren't you supposed to? Didn't they say they were going to take SMS out of it?
I don't use it with SMS.
Oh, you can't.
I use it. Okay. Yeah, because I can't. They used to, but I use it a lot because. Why do I use it? Because Kevin is on it, because my daughter and Andrew are on it. So the people I talk to most prefer that as their method of communication.
Right. And if you're a Fi user, it really is exactly what you want in messages, but only if you're, because I can use I can still use SMS with it. So it is my SMS client and my data messaging client.
And I'm much more responsive on Hangouts because those are the people I like, as opposed to the people who text me.
I'll have to remember to add you to Hangouts.
I may not accept your invitation, Leo.
Oh, probably not. So that is another thing that's confusing. So if I create a Hangouts message, I could create it to you as a conversation, they call it, which is data only, mm-hmm. or as a text message.
Oh, see, I can only do conversations.
Yeah, as an SMS. So that's nice. That's a nice feature. I wonder what would happen. I guess if I did that to you as SMS, then you would get it as an SMS message, but it wouldn't start a Hangouts conversation. So if ideally you would know which is the right way to do it with all the people you message with, and you do it. Oh, it's just what I'm. Thank you, Google, for nothing.
Well, think of the whole ecosystem, this whole text. I mean, texting was the easiest thing out there, and it's just become, how did it get so complicated?
Yeah.
I blame GIFs.
Well, yeah, GIFs don't work on SMS. Only text works on SMS. Kevin, do you have an answer to this? Kevin seems like, Kevin, this is your beat. This is the kind of thing you would follow, is like, why?
Stuff doesn't work because
stuff
of
doesn't
their
work.
Stupid closed platforms.
Yes.
Yep. Well, no, the irony here is it's an open platform. SMS is, an open-ish platform, which means that everyone can implement it, which means you end up with five implementations on your phone that fight over it.
Right.
Facebook and Google and Apple and whoever else all want to be your SMS client. And Google has three separate groups who want to be your SMS client because that's the way Google is. So on your Android, it's like, I've got an SMS. Who's going to receive it? I'm not sure.
Every once in a while,
too, right? Both Messenger and I think
WhatsApp.
At least one of the other Facebook ones will receive SMSs. WhatsApp will do it as well, I think.
On Android, yeah, you can choose, and in fact, Signal Messenger you can choose. But then I lose my desktop capability, and I'm not sure what happens when I. Because I have, so this is a Google Fi phone, but I also want to get the same text messages on my iPhone, which is not obviously Google Fi. So Hangouts will do that. I have to run Hangouts. It's not my text messenger on my iPhone, but I run it so I can see those. And then I can also do it on the desktop because my Google Chrome has the Hangouts plugin. So Hangouts is the most universal choice for me, for a Google Fi user. But as soon as I switch to Signal or WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, I lose all of that capability. So that's doesn't work well. Anyway, Reply, which will come out sometime in the future, may even be a separate app, but it may even be part of the new Google Gboard keyboard. It will add Hangouts, Allo, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, Android Messages, Skype, Twitter Direct Messages, and Slack. It'll add a vacation responder.
Oh, no, I hate those.
Yeah, Do Not Disturb, which is a very nice feature I already have on the iPhone. And some apps, I guess Android Car does that also. And then when you get an urgent message like, we're waiting for you, Reply can make sure to get your attention, even if your phone is silent. So Reply is obviously AI built into, your message notifications.
I would like to not miss important texts.
Yeah, I don't know what the keywords are there, but...
Well, you know, it'd be really interesting because the reason I miss texts is because my phone is somewhere else.
Yeah.
I would love for it to tie into my home or one of my other devices and be like, yo, grab your phone.
So this
is Stacey. It'll do Morse code for the lights in the house, and then she'll get it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, you can laugh, but I used to have my lights turn red when my editor texted me. His phone number texts me.
That's a good idea.
Only for important stories. And if I was not at my desk, my lights would turn red, and I'd be like, "Holy crap! Breaking news! Go, go, go!"
Stacey, can you look to your left? Are you wearing a blue earmuff? Oh, that's just your hair.
Sorry, that's my hair.
It looks like you have one blue earmuff. Oh, now it's all right because you shaved your hair. Looks like you had one blue earmuff on your right ear.
You were getting used to Stacey as a half blonde.
Yeah, I'm very confused by Stacey's hair color.
Sorry.
I don't know what pronoun to use now. I look forward to this smart reply thing. It works in others' apps besides Android or not Google apps. So Ron Amadio has a nice write-up in Ars Technica as well. So I guess he got invited. I don't know. I'm waiting for my invite. I'd really like to try this, but you tell me that I can't do it because
there was an amp. I wasn't invited. There was evidently an amp day before the Google D&I, I think today in Amsterdam, but I didn't.
Amp day?
I didn't know.
That it sounds like a party. Amp day.
Yeah, I got
an
amp day.
The reply app, according to Ron Amadio, will do something along the same lines as Android, where it'll grab all the text and images from your messaging notifications through a note. There's an API for the notification listener, and then takes those notifications, rebuilds them. Wow. Just as a watch might do. And it does it so it can slipstream the smart reply options into the notification panels. Interesting. And it will block then the original notification so that you don't get duplicates.
Huh.
Yeah. I think that's a very interesting way to do it. Well, we'll find. I we'll find out. I mean, Ron got in the early access program. maybe I'll get an invite someday. All right. Moving right along. Tomorrow, Chrome gets an ad blocker. Are you ready for this?
I am excited.
A bad ad blocker. Not an old ad blocker, but a bad ad blocker, right?
It's a start.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I'll take it.
This is what they're saying. It's not as good as, say, AdBlock Plus or my preferred ad blocker, uBlock Origin.
It's better for the media industry.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's kind of... Maybe it's like a kind of a good compromise. So it'll only block ads that don't conform to the Coalition for Better Ads guidelines. But if even one ad on a site goes against that guideline, it'll block all the ads. So
until when? I mean, what if you...
Well, if they fix it, somebody, I guess it'll... Pop-up ads, pre-stitial ads with a countdown. I hate those. Autoplay video ads with sound.
Well,
large...
Next load the site, right?
Yeah, you know, Forbes does that, right? You have to watch an ad before you can get to the site. A lot of sites do that. Wired has started doing that, I think. Large, sticky ads. That's on desktop. On mobile, it'll block pop-up ads, pre-stitial ads, autoplay video ads with sound, pre-stitial ads with a countdown, but also any page with an ad density more than 30%. Flashing animated ads, large, sticky ads. I hate it when ads are sticky. And full screen scroll over ads. That's the worst on mobile, where you have to kind of, as you're scrolling the page, the ad comes up and you have to keep scrolling as the ad goes by so you can continue to read. The worst. It's using the easy list filter rules, which are kind of public and open and community curated. By the way, Google's own ad networks are not exempt. If the ad in violation comes from AdSense or DoubleClick, it'll be blocked. This is according to...
But they're not blocking our ads that mine cryptocurrencies in your browser.
Oh, that's not good.
They're blocking this will be good.
So you know who's doing that now, which is kind of... So there's, of course, a bunch of bad people.
Salon, yes.
Yes, Salon. There's the CoinHive is the company that's doing this. It's not Bitcoin. They're mining Monero. And interestingly, one of the companies doing this now is Slate, although here I am with my ad blocker on...
I think it's Salon, isn't it?
Did I say Slate? Salon.
Salon, yeah. Salon. It's, yeah. It's funny. It's the 4,786th business model attempt by Salon.
Yeah, here it is. Wasn't Salon started by Microsoft? Is that the one started by Microsoft? No, Slate was started by Microsoft. Salon was started by the former Examiner guys.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was SF Mag, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So we've noticed, here it is. We've noticed you're using an ad blocker. We depend on ads to keep your content free for you. Please consider disabling your blocker. We've seen these before. By the way, you can, it's a escalating war because uBlock Origin, which I use, allows me to set a thing that disables the ad blocker disabling message.
Blocker.
The ad blocker blocker. So I can either click OK, I've disabled it, or in beta, suppress ads. Block ads by allowing Salon to use your unused computing power. They don't give you a whole lot of detail, but if you click learn more, immediately it will start mining, I'm told. So it's mining now, I guess. And they don't really say, they talk about ads and how ad is undermining journalism, blah, blah, blah. But they don't really say, when you say learn more, they don't really say exactly what they're doing.
Oh, that's not cool.
How does Salon make money using my processing power? The demand for computing power, blah, blah, blah. We intend to use a percentage of your spare processing power to contribute to the advancement of technological discovery, evolution, and innovation.
What?
No. But for now, for our beta program, we'll start by applying your processing power to mine cryptocurrencies to recoup lost ad revenue. So, in other words, this whole thing about contributing to the advancement of technological discovery, evolution, innovation. Yeah, no, never mind. We're going to do mine cryptocurrencies. We plan to further use any learnings from this to help support the evolution and growth of blockchain technology, digital currencies, and other ways to better service the value exchange between the content and user contribution. I'm not against this idea, except that we've seen these already. We've seen these JavaScript-based crypto mining programs abused. Some of them stay on the machine even after you leave the site. So I think it's a little tarnished.
One of my entrepreneurial students is working on a business along this, and I won't give it away. But when he gets ready to say it publicly, I think it'll be much more helpful and at a higher standard for publishers.
Yeah, I'm not in principle against the idea of it doing this, as long as it doesn't peg my processor.
No, as long as it's transparent, you know.
Yeah, and as long as it stops when I leave.
Or when you have the ability to turn it off. Kevin, were you trying to? I'm sorry.
Did you see the story this weekend?
No, what's the story?
I just put it in the chat. Somebody took over a library that lots of sites were using called BrowserLab, that was an accessibility library, and they injected the CoinHive mining code into it.
Yeah.
Which meant that suddenly lots of government websites in the UK and Australia were mining cryptocurrency.
Well, and, yes, and YouTube ads, and there's lots of places. So this is already, yeah, this CoinHive Monero miner has already kind of been tarnished by these. 4,200 websites were affected by Browse Aloud, including uscourts.gov. Oh, Jeff, cuny.edu.
Oh, no.
The UK Student Loans Company. Yeah, I forgot we had talked about this yesterday on Security Now.
The UK Information Commissioner.
Manchester.gov.uk, NHSinform.scot, agriculture.gov.ie, that's the Irish Department of Agriculture, Croydon.gov.uk, a lot of these. So they were using Browse Aloud, which was a legitimate, or was considered a legitimate, it was an accessibility feature to read the text out loud. Was this Browse Aloud that did it, or was it a hack?
Browse Aloud was compromised.
Compromised, okay.
Browse Aloud was compromised. And because they were embedding something that didn't, that wasn't versioned and wasn't hashed, they could just change the code in it.
This is really a huge weakness in general. You're running JavaScript, you're running code in the browser. The code is, you know, can be do all sorts of things, including crypto mining. So presumably they're fixing this. Not CUNY's fault. CUNY was doing the right thing by putting a text reader on their sites to make it accessible.
Which we have to do by law.
Right.
Right.
4,500 sites. So that was the
thing. Browser said, oh, insert this, and you will fulfill these mandates to be accessible.
Right.
And so, but that's why it was proportionally government sites that did it, because right. they tend to follow those mandates. Right.
So back to the ad blocker in Chrome. It will not block that.
For now.
Yeah. Now, I thought, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought you, AdBlock Plus, that's what AdBlock Plus was blocking, was the ads that were not approved by Coalition for Better Ads.
The recent version 4 was blocking those ads that weren't paid for.
Right. Well, but that was, paid for by...
paying off AdBlock, yeah.
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 Anyway, I use uBlock Origin, which is free and does not have that kind of fishy relationship with advertisers. I know. I don't want to, but
That's why I hope the Chrome one gets rid of the irritating ones and lets the decent ones in.
It's not, to me, it's not the ads that I'm blocking. I'm blocking the security issues of things like that CoinHive mining code. The tracking doesn't bother me either. It's mostly security and frankly, the weight of sites.
That's what I'm doing.
The bandwidth consumed. So Google, we'll see. Tomorrow it happens. That really is the adpocalypse. Everybody said when Apple put that into Safari on iOS that was going to be the adpocalypse. Well, now Chrome is the dominant browser. And this is not just on mobile. This is on desktop as well.
Then also, I put another thing in the rundown that Google was, I think this is programmatic retargeting advertising. They called it reminder ads.
Oh,
you looked at these boots on Amazon. We're going to bug you about them for 6 months. I don't know if that's the same thing, but I think that the report is that Google's looking at making you able to block those as well.
Sometimes I like those. I might look at something on Nordstrom, and then eventually I find out that it's on sale through a retargeting ad, and then I'm like, bam, go.
Well, you don't have to turn it on. This is a setting.
You don't have to turn it off.
Yeah. Oh, I do, because I cannot handle any more autoplay ads. Good Lord.
Well, this is in your Google ads. This is separate. This would be in the Google ad settings on your phone. So Google's doing these reminder ads. I mean, this is their Google ad network.
Everybody is. Yeah.
I've
never heard them called reminder ads. In the jargon, they were called retargeting.
Just reminding you. It actually, what's interesting is it will show you which reminder ads you're... Actually, Stacey, you might like this. It's pretty granular because it'll say, here's reminder ads. You can say from this one, okay, but not from this one.
Oh, nice.
What
they
should also do is, I bought that thing already.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to. You could just check that box off. You don't bother me, DIY Plaza. I'm never going to do it myself.
But the advertiser would get better information to say, you're one of ours. We're going to stop bugging you because you actually bought our product. Thank you very much.
This tool allows users to view all the reminder ads currently tracked to your profile from one of over 2 million sites that use Google's advertising services. Users can then choose to mute individual reminder ads and view those that they've already muted with their ad settings.
Oh, my God, you guys.
That sounds handy, actually.
Yeah, and then it's actually a win-win because you're right. Advertisers get some benefit, right?
Do you like that, Stacey, now or not?
Because then they know that...
Yeah, you don't want to be reminded.
Well, they know that you've actually bought the thing, which is the classic one. It's like, right. Yes, I've already bought that already, right.
Muting only lasts for 90 days.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, you guys. There is the most adorable little boy carrying a stuffed animal coming up my back patio, and I can see it. But I'm
do you know him?
I do.
Oh, okay. It's not a strange little boy?
No, he's so adorable. And he came up and then he just ran away and I don't know what's happening.
See, if you had a Ring video doorbell, you could save that video for posterity.
He didn't make it all the way up to the doorbell.
Well, it still would see him when he moved.
Is he a boy your daughter's age? Is that what you're saying?
He's my daughter's
suitor?
Let me tell her that he's running around via text.
Yeah, okay. Go tell her she'd want to run out and kiss him. then run, she's then not gonna run away.
Kiss him.
Then run away. Just on the cheek. Run away. Turn bright red. Those were the days.
Oh, you guys, maybe I'll have to leave to go supervise them. That just occurred to me.
No, just here's the deal. 1 foot on the ground all the time. Door has to stay open. That's all. Simple.
And sit in a room with one of Mommy's many cameras. So we're okay.
No, that would be terrible.
Just say, Mom. Just remember, Mommy has IoT devices everywhere.
Everywhere.
I do. Apparently, he's made it indoors, so I'm not sure.
I think it's cute that he's carrying a stuffed animal, right? Is that his? You think that's a Valentine's gift for her?
Of course it's a Valentine's Day gift.
Oh, my God.
Oh, look at Stacey.
It's begun.
I can't believe I'm missing this, you guys.
Go. We'll take care of it. Go. Oh, get a picture.
Leo can go to ad.
I can go to an ad. Stay tuned as we find out what's happening between Stacey's daughter and this strange boy as the world turns. But first, a word from FreshBooks. Did you know that? I didn't know this. It's a great stat. 44 million people in the U.S. have a second job. Sometimes we have to, right? But the side hustle can also be the thing you really love and you want to do more of, right? Maybe it's a passion project, a little extra income. If you're doing that, I want you to keep you on the right track, and I want to do it the easy way with FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. Love FreshBooks. If you have a business where you have to invoice people, FreshBooks will give you the invoicing, makes it very easy to do, but you also get all of this additional benefit because it turns out in the process of doing this and keeping track of your expenses and outstanding invoices, paid invoices, you're actually doing accounting without even knowing it. Their intuitive dashboard gives you quick access to all the information that you would need, spending, outstanding balances, total profit, and other accounting reports. You'll know how you're doing at any given moment, and next month, tax time, you'll be ahead of the game. Well, you will if you do it now. Now, if you do it now, you'll be ready for next year's tax time. With FreshBooks, as always, you can send professional-looking invoices in seconds, and those invoices let you take credit card payment directly from the invoice, which means your clients will pay you, on average, twice as fast. Twice as fast. No more waiting in line at the bank to deposit checks, no more chasing clients. Clients actually like it, that they can clear their desk, just respond to the invoice with a, here's the money. And they get points or whatever. They love it. It's amazing. FreshBooks is always adding new features too, like now you can create proposals right on FreshBooks with rich text content and images and customizable sections. You can track, if you bill by time, you can track hours. You can have different fees for different services. FreshBooks automatically connects to your bank account and updates your expenses daily. In fact, it's really easy to get expenses in. You just take a picture of the receipt, upload it, and FreshBooks does the rest. From payment reminders to late fees, automate as much or as little as you'd like to so you can get back to doing what you love. Make this year your most productive year yet. With FreshBooks, you'll be ready when tax time comes along, and you'll be set up for success when you decide to turn your passion project into a full-time gig. That's what I did. It is what I did. Try FreshBooks free right now for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/twig. FreshBooks.com/twig. Don't forget to put This Week in Google when they ask you, how'd you hear about us? Right in the form there. This Week in Google. FreshBooks.com/twig. Is true love blossoming in the Higginbotham household?
Oh, it was so cute. He was actually trying to be sneaky, and the dog and my camera spoiled him. Oh,
the cameras did.
Well, he knew we had some cameras. He was trying to figure out where they were.
What grade are they in?
Sixth grade.
Oh yeah, that's exactly when it starts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute. So cute. So. Oh my gosh. Mm. Oh, that's a special moment.
For her, yes.
Yeah.
Well, for you too.
It's for mom too. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like,
it's kind of a mixed feeling, right? It's like my little baby's growing up.
This little boy is the sweetest.
Yeah,
little boy.
Good.
Oh my goodness.
No tats or anything.
No tats. Not yet. I'm waiting.
All right. I don't know what to say about this. I have to say, I guess this is a good thing, but it kind of irks me. Google Chromium has announced the beginning July 18th, the release of Chrome 68 if your site is not HTTPS, it will be labeled not secure. Now, of course, Twit is HTTPS. My blog is HTTPS. But I do have a site, the radio show site. It was designed a few years ago.
There's a lot of historic sites that
aren't. A lot of sites are not HTTPS. There's no accounts on that site. There's no login. You're not buying anything. It's a free, wide-open site. I don't know. Uh-oh.
What's happening?
I think room service is here. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
We're just chock full of distractions today.
Anyway, at the same time, having HTTPS everywhere protects everybody. There isn't any longer a performance hit. Modern machines are so fast, that's not a problem. There is always, even with a site like the web radio show website where, you know, there's no login or anything, there's always the risk of a man in the middle, somebody popping, you know, you're at a coffee shop, you're visiting the Tech Guy Labs site, and somebody puts a pop-up saying, hey, thanks for visiting Leo. Would you like the complete collection of Leo CDs for only $9.95? Just fill in your credit card information, except it's not me. I don't sell that. And somebody's stealing. So there's always that risk, and HTTPS protects you somewhat. You agree? Let me ask Kevin, is this a good thing?
It's a trade-off because there's still a lot of extra overhead setting up an HTTPS site.
It's going to be expensive for me. It's not merely getting the certificate, which is expensive enough.
It's only like $50.
Well, it depends what you get. If you get an extended cert, it's much more expensive. And I don't know if we'd have to get a wildcard cert for Tech Guy Labs, but those are thousands of dollars. But that's not the end of it. This site was not designed with
You can get one per subdomain.
Yeah, we have a wildcard cert for twit.tv. We just renewed it. It was very
good. What if you're First Baptist Church?
Right.
Yeah, and you have a simple little site that just says when the service is
wrong. Well, and I don't know how much it's going to cost to add secure HTTP to my site, but it's not something you just flip a switch. You have to
lots of amateurs out there.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on your hosting. So some of the hosting sites is flipping a switch these days.
Yeah, you can do Let's Encrypt. And you can. But so, not everybody.
We literally just did this last week.
Did you to what site? To the Stacey on IoT?
Actually IoT podcast, because we built a Metam A skill. And you have to have HTTPS to build a Metam A skill. But we went to GoDaddy and we're like, hey, we need a security cert. They're like, give me, I think it was like 50 or maybe $75. And they turned it on. It republished all of my podcasts and redownloaded it for everybody. But other than that, seamless.
So I don't know. Tech Guy Labs is a Drupal site. Lullabot designed it for us maybe 4 years, 5 years ago. I don't know if it's that simple. We'll find out.
It depends what you hosted on. So, I've got a bunch of stuff on App Engine.
We use a company called Black Mesh. I presume. Well, I don't know. I just don't know. But actually, Black Mesh is renamed to, or just was acquired by Contigix. So, I don't know. I'll have to find out. If it's a simple switch, fine. But this is a burden to some people, right? Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just so easy now.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It's you know, if you set up a new site, you should be able to do it straightforwardly because people have now made it straightforward, including Let's Encrypt. But if you've got an old site that you need to change, then it's a bunch of work. And that is overhead. And also then you get into the, do I redirect HTTP to HTTPS, which means I'm adding the fragility of certificate renewal to it as well. So there's a set of extra things you need to think about. And if you set up with HSTS, then if your certificate goes, nobody can get you a site at all. So there is extra fragility being added.
Those will mostly be edge cases. And I guess Google's rationale is the benefit in general is so high that we want to encourage everybody to go to HTTPS.
And go on, Kevin.
Well, the other thing is, if it's not HTTPS, then your ISP can man in the middle of you and inject stuff into the page, which they've done. So part of it is, from Google's point of view, is stopping people corrupting their sites, corrupting other people's sites that they're hosting as well. So there's a rationale for it. But the other thing that's changed in the last few weeks is that the W3C has said that and I think the other browser manufacturers have agreed, is that any new web features will require HTTPS from now on. So in the same way that progressive web apps and those tools require HTTPS so that they can be sure that the code is going to the right site, a lot of the other new features are going to have that requirement too, which will mean that in order for you to take advantage of the latest browser features, you would need an HTTPS site as well.
So, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't there a bit of a paradox here? Is that the reason that Google can't let publishers use their own domains is because of exactly the security issue?
No, I think that's more a caching issue. But yeah, what they want to do is load all the pages into the same domain so you can do the side to side flip quickly. And doing that across domain was harder, so they made it. That's why they proxied it into the shared cache thing.
Oh, I was told there was a security.
So the piece that they're enabling. So when you do the mobile search and you get the carousel and you click through to one story and then you can swipe to the other sites, that can be instant. Getting that preload working when it wasn't the same domain was harder for them.
But I was also told that if you tried to say, oh, I know this is served off something called amp.google, but really it's nytimes.com. It's okay. Really, it's okay. Well, then that's a kind of, in essence, spoofing of a domain. That, yeah, fine, I trust Google to do it, but there was nothing in the standard to enable it to stop others from using it badly. That's what somebody told me about a year ago.
There's more than one way to do that. But yes, at one level, you can't do that.
Kevin, are all of your sites secure?
Nope. KevinMarks.com isn't yet. That's on my list to do. But some of my other tools are. So SVGShare.com is, and yeah. I went through several of my other tool sites. But KevinMarks.com, I host in some complicated way that I need to fix. it's basically currently hosted on Heroku for no good reason. So it's one of those, in order to fix this, I need to move it to a different hosting thing, and I haven't gotten around to doing it yet.
Yeah, I mean, Twit's hosted on Heroku. It's a Node.js app, and it is secure. I mean, you can, but it was designed from the ground up to be secure. And I remember when we did it, we had to pay extra to get the developers to do that. It was there is a cost to it. Now, the downside is that you will be labeled in the Chrome, a browser URL box not secure. I don't know. It's not like there's a big red sign saying don't go to this site. I don't know how bad this is going to be. I imagine some sites will opt to be not secure.
Go ahead, Stacey. And that's fine. I was going to say I had an experience recently where I was trying to pay for an after school activity or something, and it was a small vendor, it wasn't even Shopify. I don't know what the payment processing was, but her site actually wasn't secure. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to send you my credit card information over this. And it was actually really handy. Ooh. And I told her about it. And, she was like, oh, I don't know how to do this. And so I sent her a couple resources, and she was like, a week later, maybe, was like, I got everything worked out. I'm secure now. Thanks so much for helping me with that.
Oh, nice.
So, and this was like, this is a mom who basically started her own, Tura culture kind of business for kids.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It feels like mountain out of a molehill.
I won't gainsay that. It's good. If all the web were HTTPS, that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. I just worry about smaller sites where this might be a burden. By the way, Firefox is doing it. Microsoft's already said, this has all been going on. Firefox 60 will have a new not secure indicator that has a padlock that's got a line stroke through it. Microsoft's Edge and Internet Explorer will do something very similar soon. So everybody's going to do this. It's not...
Think of it as a burden, like the same burden you have to do, how you have to prove you're a citizen before you can get a job. It's part of credentialing to say, hey, I'm a legitimate site on the web.
Yeah. Thank goodness there's Let's Encrypt, because that's a free, easy way for many sites to do it. And this is really, Google's been slowly working up to this. Last year, they said, well, you get a better ranking in the search if you have HTTPS. So they've been slowly urging people to go in this direction. Here's a funny one. we've been saying, everybody thought that with the once a Oreo 8.1 was put on your Pixel 2 phone, that it would enable that special Pixel Visual Core chip so that you the camera app was using it. Ron Amadio tweeted this week, I got a fun correction from Google today. The Google camera app does not use the Pixel Video Visual Core. Google's camera app doesn't use Google's camera chip. So Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, all of which are going to get to use it, will be the first. So they don't do it because they do something called ZSL and fast buffering so that they get faster HDR capture. We don't need to take advantage of it, says the Google Pixel team. All right.
That I don't understand this at all.
Corporate politics.
It's like,
if you didn't need it, what'd you put it in the camera? What'd you put it in the phone for?
Yeah, you don't design a chip and focus on this particular aspect and not use it. I don't understand.
And IH.
You know, there, if you read the thread, the Twitter thread after Ron's surprise comment, a lot of speculation about why this is. Maybe the most credible one is, well, all the Google teams are siloed. They just didn't know.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Well, you put a chip in there. I wish you'd told us ahead of time.
No, I don't like your chip. It's not as good as what we do.
Yeah, we're not going to use your chip because we like our chip.
I got my code is better than your chip. So, I don't know.
Very strange.
Brent, this is one of those moments where there's people at Google who know what's going on.
Yeah.
They're laughing.
I think the Pixel 2 camera is still very good, right? Stacey, you agree.
You just
took a picture of a boy giving a teddy bear to your daughter with it.
It makes me look amazing, and that never happens.
All right. Anyway, I don't. You know what have we learned here?
Google's confused.
Don't trust the tech press. They don't know what the hell they're talking about, including us. Because I said, "Oh, now the chip's turned on. We're all going to get fantastic."
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
we did talk about
that. The great thing was, yeah. But I love Ron being straightforward and saying, "Oops, I got a correction."
Yep,
journalism. No, that's correction. Right. That's great.
And I'm doing it too right now, thanks to Ron. Okay, there you go. Did you see the Boston Dynamics robot opening the door for the other Boston Dynamics robot?
Right, and please don't do a the world's doomed thing. It was wonderful. Oh,
okay, it is cool. But I showed that to my daughter because she does not have the nightmare visions that I have about those robots. And she was like, that's a little creepy, Mom.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is.
No.
So here comes the robot, which in itself is creepy. It's trying to get through a door.
And asks its friend.
Come here, friend. Here comes the friend, which is the same robot, but this one has a hand on top. Opens the door, and I love it because it props the door open with its foot.
Yeah.
Well, this is exactly how I open the door when my stuff, you know, when you've got
you got a full hand
full of stuff.
Yeah. He opens the door for his friend.
Put your body in there, and then go.
Then creepy.
Oh, it's not creepy.
Big Dog is a creepy robot. That base is just a creepy robot.
My favorite tweet on this is somebody said that the Boston Dynamics business model is clearly just to make viral videos.
Yeah, because, you know, for all we know, that's not autonomous. I don't know if that's autonomous or if – I mean, I don't know whether that's being controlled or not. I presume it's autonomous.
Did you see the BuzzFeed mocking it?
No.
I think it was BuzzFeed. Yeah, BuzzFeed did not an article. They did a little video. Let's see. BuzzFeed.
We're all now looking for the Spot.
We're all now looking for it.
Where is parody?
Oh, sad. It was one of their writers, and I can't remember which one.
I saw it four times this morning, but I can't find it now.
Is it this one? I don't know. I don't know if it's this one.
Hello, I am Atlas. I just got a job at Boston Dynamics moving boxes in the warehouse. Time to go for a walk to celebrate. Oh my. What a day. My wife and kids will be so proud of me. It is so beautiful here in the New England woods. I couldn't be happier. Life is great.
If you're just listening, there's a. This is to accompany
Oops,
the videos.
It's slippery out here.
We've all seen of the robots walking.
Yikes.
Around.
What? No, I haven't been drinking. Whoa. Oh, God. Okay, maybe just a few drinks to help with the nerves. Yikes. Give me a break. That was my first job interview. I'm so nervous, Ted. I hope everyone at work likes me. Okay, 10-pound boxes, no problem. That's one. This stuff ain't so bad. Hey camera, easy with the upskirt shot, ha ha ha. Nailed it. One more box and my day is done. Oh, hi Ted, what can I do for you? Whoa, take it easy Ted. Whoa, yikes.
Ted is...
Come on man, I just need to move this last box.
Pushing him around with a hockey stick. You've seen them.
Ted, what the... Okay, I get it. Hazing the new guy. Well, you've had your
Ted
fun.
Ted really is an ass.
Ted, just let me do my job. Seriously?
Poor Carson has to mark all these things down.
Are you kidding me? You're a real jerk, Ted. Finally. Time to punch out. Jesus Christ. Ow. Oh God, my face. I think you broke my robot nose. You got to be kidding me. You're a Ted. I'm getting the out of here. No job is worth this I quit.
Sorry.
Seriously, this is bullshit.
I have to run
that
this.
Ted is a total
I'll leave the hell out
so
of
I
it.
Need a drink. This place.
I'm sorry, I had to do that. I don't know if that's the one you were talking about.
That wasn't, but that was amusing. This one starred people, but I cannot find it for the life of me.
It's okay, that was better.
That was really...
I apologize for those of you watching live, hearing all those sounds. It's kind of like watching a Logan Paul video, wasn't it? Speaking of which, YouTube says, Logan, you can't make any more money after your recent pattern of behavior. But just for a few months, then we'll get you back. Logan Paul really has just continued to push the envelope, first by showing a dead body. And now, after that, instead of being contrite and cleaning up his act, he's done all sorts of things. Like, I think he tased a dead rat. He took a fish out of a pond to give it CPR. He encouraged his followers to eat Tide Pods. So, YouTube said, in response to Logan Paul's recent pattern of behavior, we've temporarily suspended ads on his channels.
You know what the Boston Robots robot would call them?
Temporarily. Temporarily. We don't know how temporary it will be. But, you know, YouTube makes, if Logan Paul makes, and it's estimated he does, make $1.5 million at least a year, that means YouTube must be making twice that. So, oh, I'm sorry. Did I say a year? A month, $1.2 million, according to Social Blade, $1.2 million a month, and I'm guessing that YouTube makes, you know, gives him 50%. We don't know. YouTube never said, but if it's costing Logan Paul $1.2 million a month, it must be costing YouTube $1 million a month. You know, you don't keep him suspended for too long. Maybe a week, a few days.
Well, so, and this is by no means to excuse him. So he's 22, and I feel like if you actually, it's a chance to guide him a little bit and say, hey, yo, that's, you've gone too far. You're done for now.
It's a mixed message, though, Stacey, because really the audience has been guiding him to get more extreme, right? Because the audience numbers go up. He makes more money. Yeah. You don't get to $1.2 million a month by being boring. You get to $1.2 million a month by lighting mattresses on fire and, you know, doing crazy stuff.
Well, yeah, but, you know, YouTube is saying this is where we're going to draw the line and saying, all right, you can come back. And now, you know, I mean, if he goes over again, that's different. But he hasn't had any guidance, really, from he
where
apparently
are
has
his
no
parents
moral, yeah. He has no moral compass.
Well, meanwhile, you have a YouTube executive looking down their nose at Facebook, but they're all looking down their noses at each other, and none of them has their act fully together.
Yeah.
I didn't put that in the rundown, but Casey Neistat, who I didn't realize until last week, was gone from CNN already.
Yeah, Beam or Beamy, whatever he calls that service. Beam, I guess.
you don't have to know now.
Yeah. How much did CNN pay for that?
I don't know. January 25, they're out. So anyway, Casey interviewed the head of Robert Kinsel, the head of one of the heads of YouTube.
$25 million last year, Beam. Bought from Casey, and they're shutting it down. Oh, well. Man, why don't I get any of that stupid money? I want some of that stupid
sweet,
money.
That sweet, sweet media money.
Because you got to wear your hat backwards.
That's sweet,
that
stupid
media
money.
Media desperation cash. You know what? You're not... I wonder how much of this is a... And this is probably just me projecting, but a backlash against that kind of bro culture, that juvenile...
I think that's what it is, yeah.
I don't know if that's all of this, but it certainly has to play into it.
The problem is that these mainstream media folks and YouTube and everybody else really wants the 18 to 25-year-old. And and they're not watching TV. Nobody knows how to reach them. Advertisers are desperate to reach them because, you know, you get kids eating Tide Pods early, they'll be eating Tide Pods their whole life. So...
Which will inevitably be very short.
Well, that's supposed to be true, but the life might be long here.
It won't be a long life, but at least you'll have good sales on your Tide Pods. No, don't, kids, don't eat Tide Pods, okay? It's not good for you. They look delicious, but they're not. This is more serious than we're making it out. There's 22 people working for the Beam team. They're probably all out of work. They created a Beam News for CNN. A scant 269,000 subscribers, more than ours, but and they'd only put out a few dozen videos. So apparently it wasn't reaching those 18 to 25-year-olds like CNN was hoping.
Yeah, they're not going to reach the 18 to 25-year-olds. Those kids fall gone to YouTube.
You know what they're doing? They're busy being mad at Snapchat. That's what they're doing.
They're amazed by that.
So they are enraged.
Now, maybe I just don't use Snapchat enough. The Snapchat.
Because you're too old.
I acknowledge that the Snapchat user interface has been slightly modified. Not so much that, but this is making these tweens crazy. Hundreds of thousands of petition signatures. I think it was 300,000. Tens of thousands of tweets. They want Snapchat to go back to the old, to the point where Snapchat's actually starting to take it seriously and said, well, we like our new design, but if you don't agree, maybe we'll change it back. They've actually started to acknowledge maybe they're going to change it back. There was a fake tweet saying that Snapchat had promised to, this is from Isaac Svobodny, who has said, I made this up. The Snapchat update sucks. Retweet to save a life. And then he has a fake Snapchat posting. How does 50,000 retweets sound? 1.5 million retweets. So, I mean, if you're Snapchat, I guess you're paying attention to that. Does anybody have an opinion on this? I'm asking the wrong people, I know. But does anybody?
Yeah, we're too
old. It looks the same to me. What does your daughter say?
She's not on Snapchat, but I feel like Chrissy Teigen, because, you know.
Chrissy Teigen, Marcus Brownlee, who is now on the same level as Chrissy Teigen, apparently, and one other celebrity all said, no, you got to change this.
Yeah, so she's not.
What was their objection? I don't use Snapchat.
Because she can't see. Oh, it's something about making people look like friends when they're not friends or something. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, remember, Newsfeed was roundly unpopular, and Zuck stuck by it. So sometimes they're right.
600,000 signatures on the change.org. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Let me update that. 991,000 signatures on the change.org site. It's made many features more difficult. So
poor little Willis.
I think it was that she couldn't see things that her fans were trying to tell her. So she was frustrated, and then her actual friends, the way that the people you follow, their stuff shows up, was frustrating.
Yeah, and then and then people were breaking their streaks. Something.
Oh God, not the streak.
The streaks. There's something about the streaks.
However, meanwhile, can I relate it? Actually, Snapchat, I think, did something very good this week.
Chrissy Teigen has moved on. Her latest tweet: Kraft makes a thick and creamy version of their original mac and cheese, but why not just replace the original with it? It's infinitely better. So she's moved on now. She's worried about mac and cheese.
She is worried about lots of things. She is an all-around
She's
general
really
full person.
A firebrand in the social sphere. She's
making the world a better place. So Snap did something very good this week for
yes.
news sites.
My
friend Rahul Chopra, who left Storyful, who's now there in charge of news stuff, they made the Snap Map, which is really actually very useful, embeddable, particularly in news sites. So when you have something like the Women's March going on, you want to see what it's like from the people who were there. This enables you to put the map with the snaps that are public. So there are two things about it. One is the things that people chose to share publicly, and two, there isn't an identity, which, you know, you can go both ways on that. Three, it'll expire after 30 days. Nonetheless, it's a neat use of a way to hear from people who are at an event, and Snap does algorithmically and humanly curate or take out the worst of the stuff, and you have it's very, very hard, they tell me, to spoof a location. So if you say you're at the Women's March in Washington, you're at the Women's March in Michigan. So I think it's pretty cool. If you go to map.snapchat.com and look up someplace like New York right now,
is it just a map of people using Snapchat in that location?
It's the snap. So there's a heat map there. So I'm in New Orleans for Mardi Gras. Little dog on the bar violating health laws.
That really is an old man response. You know, that's violating health laws.
Get off my bar.
Get off my
kids.
Bar. Wow, something's going on north of us. There's a hot red dot. Look at that, north of Petaluma. I don't know what's going on.
Well, what's going on there? Click on it.
Click on it.
And you'll see snaps.
Will I see snaps?
Yeah, so yes, you will. Many.
Looks like they're putting the guy's attaching a rubber glove to his exhaust. So that's exciting.
It could be really dangerous, couldn't it?
I think that's literally where the hot spot is. Let's see where else. Oh. Let's see what's going on in Mardi Gras. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, see, it's actually going. It's actually hotter in Santa Rosa. So these are people snapping in this area.
Yes.
But these are public. So tell me,
these are stories. These are stories. So they chose to make them public.
Public. Okay.
Yes.
Well, now this actually is cool because this broadens your stories.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned there's a news story. Of course, there's a high school shooting that just happened in Broward County, and there's snaps from there, too. So this is where news would be very, you know, of great. And I don't know what we're going to see here yet, police at the high school and so forth. I saw some terrifying pictures from within classrooms of kids hiding and things like that. So.
Okay.
So this is interesting. I think this is a useful tool.
It is. It is. So interesting to me too is that with our rule there, you know, you have various. All the platforms now have a different relationship with news. You know, Google's holding the DNI right now here in Amsterdam. Facebook's trying to get more like tough love talk. Campbell Brown was at Code saying, if you don't be on Facebook, don't be on Facebook. You have. Nonetheless, they're still doing good things for news companies. Then you have Snap now trying to demystify themselves for news companies. So, you know, I think there's an opportunity here for a flight to quality with the platforms working with the news companies. But then I'm an optimist.
Yeah.
You also should disclose your Facebook relationship.
Oh, right yes. There. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. I meant to do that. Yes. So um, I um, started the News Integrity Initiative, which is funded in great measure by Facebook, as well as Craig Newmark, the Ford Foundation, and others. I receive no personal funds whatsoever from Facebook. I'm here at Google DNI, and they did not pay for me to be here. They did not pay my travel, just so you know.
And I just want everybody to know I bought my HomePod with my own damn money.
Okay. Oh, I bought one for Kevin. He did not like it.
You bought one for him?
Well, he's doing it for our
Kevin
site.
Toefel.
So I bought it for the site. Yeah. Kevin Toefel. Yeah. No, not Kevin Marks. Sorry, Kevin Marks. I would never buy you anything in a closed ecosystem. Oh,
whoa, that's okay.
That's romantic for Valentine's Day. I would never buy you anything from a closed ecosystem. I like it. What happened with poor Quinn? Maybe I shouldn't say poor Quinn Norton. Quinn Norton,
I
who
can't figure this one out.
I admire very much for. Do you know Quinn? Anybody? She admired her writing quite a bit at Wired. Yes. Good byline. She went briefly to join the editorial board of the New York Times, briefly, like for an hour or two. Then apparently the New York Times read previous tweets that they didn't.
And the Post.
And they deemed unseemly.
Is that everyone on Twitter read them and sent them to them?
Yeah, which is what happens.
There was a huge pile on.
Yeah, which what happens, but
on Quinn,
she
the New York Times.
She says she's fine with it, but I'm not sure, but I don't know if those tweets really were. She was, you know, this is a problem, and she's even written an article. I remember she wrote an article about the lack of context on Twitter, and she says this is what's actually happened. The same thing to me now. To my tweets, because the lack of context on what I was saying on Twitter makes them look racist, and I'm not. In any event, she says, fine, I don't want to join your stupid board anyway.
There's a lot more roiling around the op-ed page, hiring of some conservative writers. There's another one going on right now. Huffington Post has a transcript of people complaining about the hiring of Barry Weiss. There's what's his name who was hired from the Wall Street Journal. I'm forgetting his name suddenly. Chat room help.
Can you check your mic? You're back off to the laptop, Mike.
I am.
Yeah, I think so. So you're saying that the New York Times board is a little hypersensitive right now because they're getting a lot of criticism anyway, and they
decided. Well, they did. Yeah, they're like pandering to Trump supporters.
Well, they did that weird editorial post where they just said, let's just hear from some Trump supporters and what they think, which, I mean, that's fine. I don't, you know, whatever. Let's hear now. Let me tap your. Yeah. Yeah. Now you're on the right mic. So maybe it was not wrong.
I just unplugged and replugged.
Yeah, that's better. That sounds so much better. I'm glad I said something.
So it seemed like the tweets that were bothering people were from 2014.
Yeah.
And she is talking about being friends with
Weave. Yeah.
Yeah, with Weave. And then she also.
She says, I don't like Weave. He's a terrible person, but he is an old friend of mine. I don't think that that's necessarily cause for firing.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at my dad or something, you'd be like, why would Stacey have any credentials, right?
Yeah.
But it's different, though, if you're talking about someone who's your friend.
Throw your dad under the bus, Stacey.
Well, I mean, he is very different. He has very different viewpoints than I do. Right. And they're not popular on Twitter. I can tell you that right now.
We should mention that Weave is considered a neo-Nazi, and so that's where
dad is not a neo-Nazi. No. I should say that he is not. He's just very, 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 very conservative.
Yeah,
and he's big.
Unilever say again.
And he's from a part of the country where that's very common, and part of the problem here is that we're not listening to folks in those parts of the country. So,
well,
She also, I believe, called people faggot.
Yeah, she used that slur. But again, context is really important. I mean, so I don't know. Yes.
So she did that in the context of they were people she knew from 4chan, and it was in the time when your tweets vanished quickly.
Right.
So, yeah, it probably wasn't a great thing to do on Twitter, but she was using it. Basically, she was using their vernacular. So that was that was what was going on there. So it was a context collapse thing. The thing that Quinn does is that she does the kind of journalism where you go and embed yourself in a subculture and make sense of it and then come back and write about it. And she's really good at this. She did it with Occupy. She did it with Anonymous. She did it with 4chan. She's done it with a bunch of other places like that. And so part of what they found was what she was doing there. And that's why she would have been very good for the Times, because they really need someone to explain the nuances of this stuff and help them understand this, rather than just saying, oh, let's get some Trump supporters in, saying, you know, why is there an alienated set of people who don't believe the New York Times would ever say anything to them? And Quinn would be able to help them do that.
And the irony of this is she wrote the kind of definitive article on Medium about context collapse. In which she says, I dance with the trolls and I enjoy it. I have some wonderfully sketchy internet friends. This comes from covering Anonymous and other lovely, crazy hackers and anarchists over the years. I have a deep affection for their horribly rude talk and the strange problems they're trying to solve. Sometimes they're stupid, sometimes brilliant, more often a bit of both. The problem is that people, she's talking exactly about this problem, and then she gets bit by it, which is kind of amazing.
Right, which I think Stacey was saying too is that if you start to reject people by their association with somebody you don't like, that's a slippery slope.
Yeah. Yep. Well, this is the Twitter problem, and frankly, in 2013 and 2014, I think probably nobody realized that things you say on Twitter could bite you 4 years from now.
Okay, anything you say on the internet can bite
now
you.
We know.
At any point in time.
Now we know.
We should have known that from day. I don't know.
No, absolutely. But that's the point. But that is the point about context collapse. And it's worth reading that article because she explains it in that when we started blogging, when we started tweeting, we started using these things, in our head, we were talking to the four or five other people who we were talking to and who were talking to us. And it was easier to do it in public than it was to do it in private, just because that's how the system was set up. And that's down to technologists like me not thinking about it much. And the reason Snapchat took off in the first place was it didn't do that. It erased everything after 30 seconds after the people had seen it. And they had to go away and invent this stories thing that lasts like 24 hours rather than 10 minutes so that they could actually have something they could sell to advertisers. And that is part of the challenge of this.
The other challenge,
one of the things Quinn says Norton's law that Quinn proposed is that everything on the internet is either deleted or permanent. It's either deleted or public.
Yeah.
Those are the two states things tend towards. And that's come back and, been a problem for her. But it's, I find it frustrating because, I've known Quinn a long time. She has written some of the best journalism about the internet of anyone. And she would have been an asset to the New York Times.
Yeah.
And she's always had this liminal process where she goes and disappears into these strange places and comes back with make sense of them.
Thank you. I'm glad that we had you on, though. I think that that we needed that defense, frankly.
Uh-huh. Well, what's really frustrating, and this is editorial board versus the newsroom, but taking her and firing her and leaving someone like Glenn Thrush, who is a documented sexual harasser, you feel kind of like, wow, okay, no. So that's that I saw that and I was like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, according to the CEO of the New York Times, print journalism only has another decade. And then it's over.
Woohoo! Let me get to my amped up emails.
Actually, the Times is doing really well. Almost $1 billion in revenue from subscriptions.
Which is really laudable. It's amazing.
Yeah.
$1 billion consumer revenue.
Yeah. Isn't that great? So I think what Mark Thompson, the CEO of the New York Times, is saying is that the print version doesn't have a lot longer. But
many years ago, I heard Arthur Sulzberger say at an event where I was, he said, I could get rid of $1 billion cost tomorrow, which is a print, but I get rid of $1 billion revenue with it.
Right.
And so now with the FT and the Times, you start to see where you have a sustainable business in digital. But let's be clear, these are exceptional properties, exceptional brands. It's not going to be the Metropolis Daily disgrace does not live under the same economics and scale.
Well, and I think you can thank Donald Trump for some of the success of the Post and the Times. And I wonder if Times settle down. people will lose interest in reading the news, and all of those digital subscriptions may evaporate.
I feel like a lot
I'd
of
buy
the
five
time-
subscriptions. Go ahead, Stacey.
Oh, I was going to say the Times has done a nice job of rounding out their coverage. And they've got their hard hitting actual journalism, and then they've got God, how many of you? Maybe it's because I'm a woman, but I get constantly those Smarter Living stories. They're just pitched to me all the darn time. Like, and some of them are really interesting. And then they've got their whole food effort that's a subscription model for recipes. And I just think they're getting a little savvier about how they package what they do and how they define what they do.
I think that's all true, but I've been saying this for quite a while. My friend Jay Rosen has said it recently. Others have said it recently. I actually start the day with the Washington Post now. I think it's
well, that's the. I guess that's the point really is that interest. Whether it's a Trump bump or not, there's an opportunity now for these print publications to prove themselves in digital and make themselves invaluable, regardless of the current story of the day. And so, at least they have an opportunity. This, by the way, I'm reading this article by Quinn in this Medium piece. It's brilliant. You're absolutely right, and it's very timely. It's a four-parter, even though it was written in 2013. It couldn't be more timely. In some ways, it was prescient, and people should read it. And now, I really feel like the Times actually that was a big loss.
As soon as you see a firestorm, you just think, oh my God, give me the hose.
Step
now.
Away from it. Yeah, we can't afford any more controversy. But you make an excellent point, Stacey. They're not stepping away from Thrush.
Well, and I get very frustrated with the Times because they will back people and things that I'm like, really? And then to have something like this happen, you're like, what does that say about their priorities and who they're willing to protect? And that, to me, speaks a lot. And it's unsurprising, but grr.
Let's see. Let's do a little Facebook. What do you say? Let's make Jeff uncomfortable.
No, not at all.
Facebook's slowing down a little bit. Lost around 2.8 million U.S. users under 25 last year. Mark Zuckerberg kind of acknowledged it. Some of it is the modification of the, the news feed. This is from eMarketer, but they see, according to eMarketer, Facebook is losing young users even quicker than expected.
That may just because their grandparents are on there, and you can't post stuff for your grandparents to see.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting. I mean, this stuff can change in a turn on a dime, and the perception
is collapsed again. You know, that is exactly it.
Yeah, yeah. That's the collapse part.
Did you all read the 11,000-word Wired piece? Sorry, Kevin.
11,000-word Wired piece with Mark Zuckerberg's picture on the front of all beat up. Yes.
I did not, because I was out of my Wired subscriptions, darn it, or my free Wired articles, and I'm still debating the subscription.
I paid the $20. I paid it. I said,
is
you know
what?
Is
that monthly or annually?
Annually. It's not that expensive.
Oh, okay. Okay.
25, I think.
20, whatever. You get the paper magazine. You know what? I don't want the paper magazine. We talked about it on Sunday, and when I found out it was so inexpensive, I said, no, they deserve.
I'll give them that. Yeah.
They're doing such a good job. They deserve the $20.
You know what can help them?
Kevin,
Skype is not doing a good job right now, and I apologize to all who are listening. We're just having lots of
Skype. We're not doing this on purpose, folks.
Yeah, here's
but
the picture.
Kevin, we last week talked about the subscription model and what we would pay for. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago, and Jeff was saying that now when he's asked to pay for an article, he tallied it all up, and it was like almost $3,000.
Yeah,
it's $3,600.
But I had this brilliant idea for how publishers could like make this less onerous. You know how you could always get airline miles and trade them in for magazines? Yeah. Why can't I do that for digital subscriptions?
There you go. There you go.
I take something that's nearly worthless.
That's actually a very good idea.
Here's why.
Because they just wanted circulation.
For advertising. And in the case of the digital, you don't have that back. So the stamp sheets, I mean, we when I was in the magazine business, we would lose money on circulation revenue because we gained it back on advertising. That's no longer the case. So I wish that were the case, Stacey, but I'll...
Digital fixes that, though, doesn't it?
Rush that dream.
Doesn't digital help? Because the production costs are much lower, aren't they?
But the advertising revenue is just not there.
But also,
you know, the economics of magazines.
Yeah.
They will give you a reduced value subscription for air miles because if you were the kind of person who had air miles, you were the kind of person that advertisers wanted to. So there was a class thing in that as well.
So this article by Nicholas Thompson and Fred Vogelstein. Fred, didn't he write the book? Why do I know his name? Is his book about...
Fred's been writing for Wired for a long time.
And he wrote the book on Amazon, didn't he? Anyway, 11,000 words. Summarize, if you would, in five, Jeff. For those of us who've gone through our five articles of the month.
I mean, it's generally what we know. It's really the TikTok.
We've been covering this month after month. This is the stories we've been covering for the last 2 years.
It's the TikTok about... oh my God, we've got a problem here. Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have it with Russian trolls. We have it with manipulation of the news. We have it with incivility on the platform and, you know, what they've done to try to wake up to that and with the news business. And so it's going through that. I got to say, the thing that shocked me most in the piece was not about Facebook, but about News Corp.
Oh, yeah, that was so slimy doing the sexual predator thing.
Yeah, it alleges that News Corp lawyers made up sexual predation instances and complaints in order to go after Facebook. That's just a journalistic organization. If that's true, why hasn't somebody else picked up that story and run with it? That's just shocking.
It's kind of like the pretexting story of a few years ago. This is ridiculous. Yeah.
I'm sure some organization is trying to pick up and report that out. I mean, Wired has fact-checking, so I'm sure that went through something, because otherwise Murdoch will sue the pants off of them.
Yeah. Well, worth reading, then. It sounds like this 11,000-word article.
It's good. Again, as Kevin said, we've been covering it here on the show straight through. So I don't think it was anything
stuff
surprising.
We didn't know. We didn't know that stuff. Yes. Wow.
Well, I mean... These articles take months to report out. This is, right. You know, the same time we were talking about this, they were also talking about it. They just have to wait to get it into print.
Oh, I know what Fred wrote. He wrote Dogfight. That was a great book. Highly recommend it. That's where
Apple and Google went to war and started a revolution.
Yes. That was a fantastic book. Well, deeply researched. So, yeah. All right.
Fred's a good report. Yeah.
Yeah, but it makes sense. Murdoch and Facebook, no love lost. I mean, and in fact, all publishers are kind of at this point threatened by Facebook, right?
Yeah, I went to a roundtable last week where it wasn't as hostile as I thought it was going to be, but it's very wary. Campbell Brown, who's in charge of the Facebook journalism product, appeared with Adam Mosseri, who's the head of Newsfeed at Code, and they're talking tough. They're just saying, you know, to Murdoch and company, if you don't want to be on Facebook, don't be on Facebook. It's okay. But they're saying our first job is to our users and to a good experience on Facebook. I think that there is an opportunity for us in the news business. Because what happened, I can't remember if I said this before, but I'll be very quick. What happened was Facebook saw things in very blunt terms. They saw social content and public content. And public content was everything from the New York Times to Vladimir's horrible Russian blog. And when Vladimir got them in trouble, they threw out the entire bathwater. And now they're bringing back the babies of the New York Times and the Washington Post and Foreign Affairs and Wired and whatever. When that gets done, when they figure out how to do that, and they have not figured out how to do that, but when they do, I think there's an opportunity for quality news to be more alone on Facebook and be better off. But we'll see.
Well, you know, with my indie web hat on, I'm saying yes. Do not assume that Facebook is your friend. Make sure you have a website. Use Facebook as a place to publish links that go to your website. And if Facebook starts charging you to access your customers, you've still got your customers. But you know that's been a long sort of slow pot boiling that Facebook's been doing to the news people, and they did spend a lot of time you know wooing them and encouraging them to do things and giving them preferential treatment. Now they're doing the opposite. And part of that is, you know, part of what we got from that that very long Wired piece was that Zuckerberg is now convinced he actually has a problem, and that they sort of they triangulate on that three different directions, and they now believe he sees this as an existential threat, and he wants to change things, and he wants to move Facebook back to the cozy place for talking to your friends, and not the place where you discuss news articles.
The article says that Facebook's finally acknowledged that we're a platform. We've always said we're a platform, but yeah, I guess we have some of the responsibilities a publisher does as well.
Yeah, my problem is I think that Facebook is still nascent, and that their wrote this in a post 2 weeks ago, that their definition of community as conversation is still fairly shallow and temporal, and they've got to think at a much deeper level about what it means to bring communities together and why they come together and understand that. And I think that the problem is I think that when you start a platform, you think, okay, that's it, it's done. Now we'll learn everything we can possibly learn from the data we have. Well, no, it's limited by the tools you give people and the context you give them and the architecture you create.
Yes, exactly.
Facebook actually announced yesterday that they're going to allow paywalls inside Facebook's, at least in their iOS app. Sounds like it's a test or an experiment. Giving in to publishers and saying, okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, yeah.
As the Wired story said, Zuck has always been against paywalls, but other people in the company said, this is so critically important to news companies, you got to do it. And meanwhile, Google took down its first click free and is becoming friendlier to paywalls. So they both just had to.
They just had to. Not something they ever wanted to do. Well,
AMP has a paywall component now as well, which is the other part of this.
Yeah, AMP has that.
The other thing that was interesting, and it was in one of Jeff's number links, but now.
That's okay. I'm going to turn into a pumpkin in 10 minutes anyway.
Oh, we'll wrap it up soon. Okay.
So Facebook put this thing out saying, we want community leaders to use Facebook and we'll give you money and we'll give five of you $1 million, and you can come to Facebook once a month, and we'll give you another set of you $50,000 and give you benefits. And basically they've realized that the Tumblr, the person who organized the community, is somebody who's valuable, which is, that is a sea change for them. That is actually very significant. It doesn't mean they're not going to screw it up, and it doesn't mean they're not going to say, well, obviously this should all be inside Facebook, and actually maintaining a community across multiple systems doesn't make sense. But for me, that was a marker that they actually realized we've been missing this for a while. And, you know, Leo, you remember that Debs and Heather and I were talking about this 5 or 6 years ago on this network, trying to say this is the important part. And it's taken that long for this to come through, which is that the important thing is having someone human there who is moderating the community, making sure that things make sense, and making sure that it is a community and not an algorithm. And that is the missing piece that Facebook maybe is starting to realize they need.
Or how can you scale that, though? I mean, how many Tumblrs are they going to need if they have 1.5 billion users? That's a lot of tumbling.
but that's part of the point. But part of the point is that if you say, you know, there are millions of communities on Facebook, and we haven't been thinking about them as communities. We've been thinking about them as inputs to an algorithm.
Yes.
If we step back and say, we think of them as communities, as subgroups that people are in charge of, if you think about that as the place you want to do, and not as an input to an algorithm and a source of things that should be selling advertising, which is what happens. You create a community on Facebook, and it suddenly says, ha ha, we've hidden it from 75% of the people who thought they were following you.
You just invented Google Plus.
They've been betas in this for a while.
Yeah.
Well, quite.
Congratulations. Actually, I think you probably added this to the rundown. The creator of Drupal, Dries Buytaert, has actually said, I'm pulling my Facebook application from my phone, and he talks about the indie web movement. And Posse, which we've talked about before, which is published on your own site, Syndicate Elsewhere, or Pesos, which is an acronym I hadn't heard before. Publish elsewhere, syndicate to your own site.
I do both.
You're a Peso and a Posse.
Yes, a lot of us do both, and that's part of it. Is It depends a lot on ease of tooling. So for something like Instagram, it's easier to post on Instagram because they've got a pretty good app on your phone.
Right.
But then you can draw it back. There's a site called Own Your Gram that
Aaron
Parecki built.
Really love it.
Post it back to your own website as well. And you know, you can build tools that work in both directions. But the point is, you know, you want to think about both of and part of this, you know, pitching this to Jeff as well, part of this is to go to the news people and the publishers and the people and the community group people and say, don't assume that one site owned that has an engagement and advertising model is actually going to do what you want them to do, because at some point they will flip the switch on you and start charging you to talk to your friends. Think about how you can use them as well. They're valuable, but they don't have entire ownership of everything you make. And that's, if there's a sort of question of indie web, that's it. But it doesn't just apply to individuals, which is where we came from. It does apply to, you know, publishers, organizations, and groups as well.
Let's since Jeff turns into a pumpkin in moments, let's wrap up the show as we often do with picks and numbers. I'm going to let Stacey go first.
No, don't make me go first because my.
So I'm not going to let Stacey go first.
I have to set it up, so I'll disappear.
Stacey
for a
has to go set up her mirror. First, Jeff Jarvis and his number of the week.
All right, what was I going to do? Which one was I going to do? Uh-oh.
Let's go to Kevin Marks.
I got it. Okay, go ahead. Kevin. You go ahead.
Kevin Marks, Fritter.
Let Jeff go first.
All right, Jeff, go first. Don't fight, folks.
All right, a couple who met some years ago on Twitter are going to get married, and they're going to do their vows in 280 characters at Twitter.
Oh, my God. And now I know why Twitter stock's been going through the roof. Simon Savage.
That's like a Panera proposal thing, but for Twitter. Okay.
Yeah, that's cute. Do they say what their vows will be, or is this?
I don't know. It says that they learned that they had a common interest in cheese and beards.
Cheese and beards, not beer.
Beards.
They're both bearded, hirsute gentlemen. All right, that's cute. That's sweet. It'll be a Twitter office in London. Yeah, that's cute.
This is not new, is it? Christina Warren was proposed to on Twitter.
But they didn't meet on Twitter. Accepted. She'd known her fiancé for some time, I think. 280 character wedding vows. I think more than long enough.
Yes, I think so too. I think this is a blessing. Who says Twitter's not done good things to the world?
You have an odd URL in your pick, Kevin Marks. You better explain what it is.
I do. I need to explain this. Well, this is the question. Okay. You need to install Beaker. You can do this, Leah, while I'm explaining. Or I can try screen sharing, but that's always fun here.
I'll do it.
Okay. So this is another sort of indie web kind of approach, but it's one of these decentralized web ideas. Where they say trying to replace the upper layers of the web, we're trying to replace the lower layers as well. So what they say is, instead of having DNS and URLs and things like that and HTTP, we'll have another protocol called DAT, which is basically a file sharing protocol that works between sites. So instead of having a domain name, you have an ugly looking hash thing.
So I have the Beaker. This is the browser to show you this technology, right? So is Beaker. Beaker must be, the code base must be WebKit or something. It's something easy, Chrome or something.
It's broadly Chrome, yeah.
Yeah, but they have a new.
Is that the browser? I can't.
Yeah, this is Beaker browser. So I can enter a DAT colon //?
Yes. So if you do DAT colon //.
Fritter.hashbase.io. It's a Twitter clone. It's a peer-to-peer app. So is Beaker? Beaker is now. What is Beaker doing? Is it sharing my web access with other people?
What Beaker does is, the way the DAT protocol works is it's a distributed file system. So anything you publish with a DAT URL. Is shared out in a BitTorrent-like way. So there's a distributed hash table with pieces of it, and you can fetch things that way. Each root is a public key that people only see that if you give them that public key, and then underneath it you have a file system. And you can create a new document and share it with the file system.
So I'm putting...
But Fritter is a Twitter-like thing that runs on top of this.
So I am now running Fritter. It says, create a new site and add it to your library. Fritter user Leo Laporte. So this becomes... I'm serving this via... I'm so confused. Look, I've somehow created a Twitter with just me. Now what do I do?
That's right.
Yeah. And then I've got five peers. These are my peers. I'm very confused. So let's write a post.
You give me the very long dat URL. I follow you.
Oh, really? That's my URL. And I'm not serving it. I'm peer-to-peer sharing it. Is that right?
Is this decentralized Twitter?
Yes.
Oh.
So
yes, thought I heard this.
Twitter.
The link address, I don't know what it is. It's how do I oh, here it is. Copy your profile URL. Okay. So I can paste this in. Oh, it is very long. It has a hash, basically.
Well, it has two hashes in it, which is kind of annoying, but yeah.
Double hash. And so if I send you this double hash, we'll have
copy that. Put that in the chat.
Okay. Okay, good. Copy your profile URL. Now let me put this in the chat room so everybody can follow me. Now what happens when they click that? They have to have the Beaker browser for that to do anything.
They have to have the Beaker browser to click that, yes.
Okay. All DATs, D-A-Ts, need the Beaker browser to understand them. And now I could have... But, okay, so, and if I follow other people, I'm going to, I see two people. If I follow them, they'll be part of my timeline?
Yes.
All right. I've pasted it in. This is very much like, so that's why it said select profile from library. If you have a profile URL, you can, I can use that profile URL on other machines. Embed all images to create a seamless timeline. Okay. And then I've typed only one tweet, which is "Hello World," and in honor of our grooms, I've bearded myself, so I have a profile picture with me with a beard, which I've actually never had. So there you go. That's this is Fritter, and Fritter is Twitter, but it's peer to peer. Is it going to use push? Will if you put a notification on the timeline, will it be pushed into my Fritter?
Yes.
Stop pushing yourself into my Fritter.
Last week, yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, it's interesting. I like the idea. It's using some of my bandwidth, I presume.
Yes.
It's kind of like Napster.
It'll use that initially to serve you, yeah.
Yeah. And you can see... okay. And this is using Beaker and WebDB to create a simple Twitter clone. And the world is reeling.
It's basically saying, what if we replace the web from the bottom up? But the interesting thing is that once you've embraced this, you can easily start serving a website from your own machine and show it for other people who have the browser. And there is a proxy will map it back to the real web as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Web.
Yeah, that would make sense. Because if they did that, then people would find me, but then they could run Beaker and they could
be blocking the DATs.
What's blocking the DATs? My firewall, probably.
Your firewall may be blocking the DATs because I'm not saying I download them from here.
Yeah, that's another thing. You have to open port forward the Fritter protocol. We have to whitelist it. Okay.
Well, no. I mean, it worked by default for me. But
what ports is it using? Do you know?
I don't know. I didn't actually need to do that.
Didn't need to do anything. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not HTTP. Is it HTTP?
It will use HTTP as a fallback, but it. You need to have some path to discover the route for it in the first place.
And then there are public peers where you can share your long URL. Here's Hashbase, and you could in Hashbase you could share your long URL so that others could find you. Well, as usual, you've presented us with something that is going to go take many, many hours of my time to figure out what the hell it is. No, it's fascinating. And the idea that's, would be yes, that it would be a decentralized internet. You wouldn't need servers. Everybody's a server.
Yes.
Right? You wouldn't need apps. I could be Facebook.
Yes.
Somebody'd have to write an app
like
for
I've got
it.
A mirror of my website.
On what do we call this now? Fritter? No, Beaker.
That's the problem. There's layers of this. There's DAT, which is the protocol. There's Beaker, that's the browser, and understands the protocol. And there's Fritter, which is the app written on top of it.
Are there other apps?
Yes. Yeah, there's other things people are building as well.
Okay. And that I would I would find at where? At that site I mentioned.
Yes.
Yes.
If you go to the Beaker browser site, then that will get you into this.
There's more stuff. So start at beakerbrowser.com. And
yes.
And from there it's rethinking the web browser as a peer-to-peer client. Actually, that is kind of interesting. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Stacey has had time to prepare her magic mirror. Oh, you got it. She's muted.
Mute, Stacey, mute.
Unmute.
Sorry, the dog. I didn't want it to interrupt the Fritter discussion.
He's a Fritter critter, actually. It's perfectly appropriate.
And I don't know how I'm going to get you guys to see this. This is my new challenge. I'm like, because I don't think you can see.
I can see it well enough. So I see you in the mirror.
You see the,
yeah,
let's see.
I see the mirror behind you.
Do you see the back? Do you see a little, do you see the words on the mirror?
I don't see words on the mirror, no.
Yeah, so that's.
So this is a mirror that will display information on it.
Does. Let's see.
Turn your lights off. Would that help?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Okay. So, of course, we won't be able to see you anymore, but maybe we'll be able to see the... Nope. Can't see a bloody thing.
Can you see it now?
No, but...
Move the mirror closer.
No, but it's much more romantic. That's all I really wanted.
There we go. All right. Okay. Well, what you can't see... Oh, this is so terrible.
So, the idea is this is an informational mirror.
This is. So what right now it's showing the time, the weather, the weather forecast for 5 days.
Can you hold it up to the camera maybe?
Well, okay, here's my challenge. You may have to call me back because I'm going to bring the computer closer, but I'm...
Why don't you bring the mirror closer?
I can't because it's plugged in.
Oh, it's plugged in.
So that's the length of the plug.
Can you pick up the camera and slide it a little bit closer maybe? I don't know. Maybe try an angle. Oh yeah. We can kind of see now. I get it. Okay. Whoa. Yeah, we can see something. Yeah.
Okay. Oops, sorry.
Yeah. So I see like a. I see my Fritter. There's my Fritter site right there.
You twig.
Is this? So that there's
Am
some.
Am I making you guys sick?
There's some text there. Yeah, on the right.
This is TechCrunch feed and the Verge's feed.
Oh, that's a TechCrunch feed. Oh, that's a news feed in there.
The news feed, so I can read the headlines on my mirror in that screen. And it's about maybe embedded screen, and I'm trying to think about how many inches, 6 by.
Yeah, I could see. Yeah, we could see how small it is, but you can read that if you're standing in front of the mirror.
Yes, and in a minute, so you set this up. It can do news. It can do health data. It can do your Twitter.
Wow.
It can do.
How much is it?
It's 500 for a big one, I think, and 400 for a smaller one. I have to go to the website.
The idea is it'd be like a standing mirror somewhere, or could you put it in your bathroom?
You can put it in your bathroom. You can put it in the
there.
Hallway.
It is. The whole thing is, that's kind of cool.
And in a second, you should see my Fitbit data. There it is. Okay, so that's like my steps and expended energy. And
it has graphs. That's neat.
And the cool thing is it can be tuned to your users. So when I step in front of the mirror with my phone, it shows you my stuff. When my husband steps in front of the mirror, it will show him his
How do it know?
It knows because of the iPhone app. Uh-huh. So this is Bluetooth connecting from
That's
the
where it's getting the data from is the iPhone.
And you set it up so it's in range, and you can set your range. I've got mine set to like 5 feet, I think. And if you're not within range, then it has a general setting that's just like whatever you want in your general setting, like news, weather, whatever. So it's kind of fun because you can do it based on people.
Yeah.
And it's designed mostly for health and wellness. So it's not going to show you everything, but it's neat. I don't carry my phone into the bathroom, so I would put this for me in the hallway, like, because I do have my phone when I'm about to leave, and I could be like, hey, what's the weather? Okay, cool.
That is pretty cool.
So that's this mirror. It is kind of expensive, but it's a perfectly nice mirror. And
don't drop it, because it's more than 7 years bad luck if you break it.
Yeah, connected mirrors, that's like, it's logarithmic bad luck.
Yeah. I kind of like that idea, although I don't spend a lot of time staring in the mirror. But I guess if you did, like doing your makeup or something, that would
be... Well, it's motion detected too. So, you know, when I'm doing my makeup, I was doing my makeup in it, but I was like, I'm not reading stuff while I'm doing my makeup because I am doing my makeup.
Right.
So I don't really know about like that lady there, but, you know.
I don't know. What's she doing?
Well, I mean, she's not doing any in-depth makeup. That's right. Plush. You could totally do that.
Right. And read the New York Times.
Yes.
Very cool. What's it called again?
It's the Mango Mirror.
Mango Mirror. Very interesting.
And it's made in Ontario. They have a very focused privacy policy. So some of the things, and right now I should tell you, it's iOS only. It is not Android.
Okay.
So be sad if you have an Android phone and you want this. And it works with Fitbit, MapMyFitness.
How does your family feel about the fact that your house is getting more and more automated and alive?
Oh my gosh. They're okay with it. My husband saw this and he's in the bathroom and he's in the shower in front of the mirror. And suddenly he's like, wait, does this thing have a camera?
Yeah, that'd be the first thing I'd ask.
But like my housekeeper was in here and she's like, what is this? Stacy, I don't want to clean this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are definitely some.
Wow.
Some challenges.
Mango Mirror, Stacy's thing this week. Stacy does a great newsletter at stacyonIoT.com. It's free. You must subscribe. Follow her and Kevin Toefel. They have a great podcast, IoT podcast. All of it's at stacyonIoT.com. She's at GigaStacy on Twitter. Yes, next.
And next week,
yes,
Kevin should be here.
That's right.
Because I won't be.
Filling in for Stacy. And we should mention that Stacy is going to be on our panel at South by Southwest March 9th. 8:30 a.m. There will be breakfast tacos at Antone's. It's actually the first day of Interactive at South By. If you're in Austin, we have some very interesting guests. We're going to talk about consumer security, and actually, really, what I want is kind of a roadmap for the year ahead. What things to watch out for? You'll be covering IoT. We have somebody from Duo Security going to talk about authentication. There's going to be some really interesting stuff going on. And we would love to meet you. The day before, please don't laugh at us, but the day before, we're going to have a meetup at a barbecue, and it may not be the best barbecue in the world. I just don't know.
So Where is it?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Do I get to come?
You're invited. I wouldn't presume for you to, but I would love it if you would come. We have a blog post at twit.tv/blog. The place is going to be... Friedman's. Do you know Friedman's Barbecue?
No.
Okay. It's up and coming, I'm told. Up and coming. And we're going to be there. It's going to be just a casual thing, 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday night. Barbecue's on me, Stacy. So come on to friedmansbar.com and find out where it is. And we will see you. There it is. See, doesn't it look cute? Beer garden,
yes,
laid back whiskey lounge and smokehouse.
Oh, you had me at Whiskey Lounge.
Yeah. There you go. Whiskey's on me. It's on San Gabriel Street.
Okay, yeah.
Come on over. And then the next morning, if you hadn't had too much whiskey at the whiskey bar, we'll be at Anton's on 5th Street for the 8:30 panel. And I'd love to see everybody come out. We initially thought you had to have a South By badge to come to the panel, but we've been told, thank you, Antones, thank you, Capital One. It's the Capital One House. They are going to waive that requirement, so you can come even if you're not going to South By. Please come. We'd love to see you. Antones is the Capital One House, March 9th, 8:30 in the morning. Stacy, me, and a bunch of great people. Bring the mirror. Bring the mango. Thank you, Stacy. Kevin Marks is at indieweb.org. You got any big events coming up soon, Kevin?
We've got the regular Homebrew Website Club, which is I think normally it's next Wednesday, not this Wednesday.
I can't reach indieweb.org in my Beaker browser. However, I am finding some interesting apps in the Beaker browser, including a RSS feed. That's kind of cool. It's called DAT RSS Reader. And I presume that that Frazee, who built it using Chew, is hosting it. So that's kind of cool.
Yes.
And Tara's been posting pictures there of her hot pink nails and other things. So I'm very intrigued by all this.
So Paul and Tara are the people who built Fritter, and they're also building up some parts of Beaker as well.
Really, really interesting.
Yes, say hi to them.
I will.
It's one of the things. It's like they've been sort of digging away, building like the lower level pieces and getting DAT working, and then they were like, okay, then we can build a browser on top of that, and it's like now we can build a Twitter client on top of the browser, on top of the protocol, and at that point it starts being fun.
Tara's quite the nail fanatic. A lot of pictures of her nails on here. I don't know what that means. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. He's going to turn into a fritter himself if we don't let him go. Buzzmachine.com. Go enjoy the wonderful coffee in Amsterdam. Stay up late. Have a great time. It's nice to have you. Buzzmachine.com, CUNY, and elsewhere. Thank you, Jeff.
See
you next week, everybody. We do this week in Google.
Go to the seafood bar.
Go to the seafood bar, named aptly the Seafood Bar.
Seafood Bar.
AKA the Fisk Bar.
That's in Copenhagen.
Fiskebar. We do Twig every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Please stop by. Watch live at twit.tv/live. You'll hear all the swear words before we cut them out. You can also join us in the chat room, where it is swear word free at irc.twit.tv. If you can't watch live, do visit us on demand at twit.tv/twig or wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye, everybody.